Welcome back to the Hemingway List, my fellow Heming brainiacs. We are talking about The Red and the Black, Book 1, Chapter 12. Hang on, just let me log into the thingy-majig. All right, here we go. Young and ambitious. Do you think Julian will achieve anything to warrant these delusions of grandeur? That was the discussion prompt. Our treat said, I think Julian's chances to rise are decent, but I also think he's setting the bar way too high, where anything short of Napoleon's achievements will feel like failure. He turned down what seemed like a great offer because he was comparing himself to Napoleon. It is pretty delusional. On the other hand, part of me admires him for such dedication to his ideal that he's willing to go for broke and try to achieve it. I think it's foolish, because in reality nothing will ever be good enough, but you can't fault the guy for knowing what he wants. Very true. He's got a good position for someone so young, from his background. I don't really buy into the whole you can do slash be whatever you want if you just put your mind to it thing, but of course attitude and dedication do count for a lot, and I think Julian, if he can temper certain aspects of himself and not be so emotionally burdened by every perceived slight, could go far. It seemed to me that currently he's doing just as much harm to himself as good, though. He allows his ambition and honour to blind him, messing with Madame de Renal is foolish to the point of recklessness. He's not doing himself any favours by not being able to carry a simple conversation, and now turning down a good position because it wouldn't help him rise to the level of Napoleon. He could go far, but I don't even think that's what he wants to do. I'm not sure what he wants is even possible. I have to say that if I were in his position, I would take Fouque up on his offers without a second's hesitation and probably stay there my whole life, living comfortably and in good company. It sounds awesome. He found a small cave set in the virtually vertical slope of the boulder. He climbed up and was soon settled in this hideaway. Here, he said, his eyes shining with pleasure, no one could ever hurt me. His head in his hands, Julian felt happier in his cave than he had ever been in his life. I found this fairly heartbreaking. How much of Julian's crazed ambition is just a reaction to the trauma of his horrible family and a longing to just not be hurt anymore? You do see this in people about that age, sort of early adulthood, late adolescence, 18-ish, right? When you're just starting off on your journey of adulthood, trying to prove yourself in the world, and that kind of feeling of invincibility. Because it's almost like a recklessness, but it's like they don't believe in their own downfall, because they've never experienced anything really that's threatened their own downfall. I can be Napoleon. There's no consequence in me chasing whatever, turning back any offer, because the next thing that comes along will be better. He's just fearless, right, in the face of his own potential demise. And likewise, he just kind of fails to even consider that there might be very negative consequences for this conquest with Madame de Renal. For him, it's just, I can do anything. And away he goes. Non-creative handle says, Stendhal is really laying on the Napoleon love thick in these last few chapters. I think Julian certainly is in a position to succeed and achieve the status he desires, but I see a few potential issues. This ongoing rivalry he keeps trying to build up with Monsieur de Renal will not end well. Yeah, true. I mean, it's his employer. He owes so much of his fortune at the moment, his fortunate situation, to Monsieur de Renal, yet he pits himself against this man. He is still viewed as glorified help, and to try to continue challenging and dominating his boss or effectively his master could end up badly hurting him. For someone who idolizes such an infamous leader, he needs to be more mindful and maybe pay more attention to the political chapters in the books about Napoleon's life. I'm not sure how this works, but I agree with our treat that the American dream of being anything you set your mind to may not apply here. If Julian rose to the elite class, would people accept him? Or would society snub him because he was a former peasant, one foot in the good caste level, but forever stuck with the other foot in the lower caste? Jan Brunt says, to address your second point, he absolutely would encounter derision from the upper classes, no matter how high he rises or how much merit he shows. Stendhal repeatedly referred to him as a peasant, though I'm not sure if that is supposed to be droll. All self-made men of Julian's era were viewed with suspicion. I'm thinking of Speransky in War and Peace. When the upper class closes ranks, someone like Julian would be well aware that he isn't one of them. I could see this being an element of his larger plot arc as the novel continues. Yeah, back then with that whole aristocracy, it wasn't about how rich you were, it was about your bloodlines. What was the book? The American. We saw that so much in The American, when he visits America, falls in love with a lady who is, what's the word? Well, from my aristocratic family, I can't think of the word that I'm looking for, but she is sort of highly bred in that way, and her family just rejects him, despite the fact that he's extremely wealthy, because to them, he's just a rich peasant sort of thing. It has nothing to do with the wealth. They very much look down on him, even though he could sort of buy them out, essentially. Swim said the Mama Fishy said, the epigraph, Sears was an important political figure during the revolution. He published a political pamphlet in 1789, which was seen as a manifesto for liberal reforms. He joined forces with Bonaparte in 1799 in plotting the coup. He soon found himself eclipsed out of power. Random musings. Madame, thank you for that, by the way. Madame de Renal reminds me of how I felt about my high school crushes. Yeah, obsessed with hand-holding. Like, it's the be-all and end-all. It's like the highlight of their days if they get to touch each other's hands. It's kind of cute. Stendhal's description of the most gorgeous scenery mountains can offer reminds me of the Rocky Mountain High Country. We were going to visit the Alps this year, but sad face. We all had our plans dashed this year, didn't we? Julian reminds me of myself. At 19, I found myself perched on a rocky ledge in the aforementioned Rockies, singing my heart out to a Dan Fogelberg tune. I still belt out the tune when I'm feeling especially strong and happy. Relevant lyrics. High on the mountain, the clouds down below. I'm feeling so strong and alive from this rocky perch. I'll continue to search for the wind and the snow and the sky. I want a lover, I want some friends, and I want to live in the sun. And I want to do all these things I've never done. Very nice. Don't we all do this? Julian told himself carefully, presenting matters as he preferred to be perceived, what had happened the night before. I too have rejected the safe, easy path several times. In fact, I would do it all over again. Highly recommend. So have I. Would I do it again? I don't know. Who knows? Who knows what's the better path? Thank you for that. Swim said the Mama Fishy. I liked those lyrics. And you're right. That bit about him sort of kidding himself. Julian told himself carefully, presenting the matters as he preferred to perceive them, what happened the night before. You kind of rearrange the memory in your mind until it's something where you're not completely embarrassed about what happened. Sometimes that's necessary, I suppose, when you've made an ass of yourself. Let's keep reading. Chapter 13, Open Work Stockings. It is entitled, a novel. It's a mirror carried along the highway. That's Saint Rial. When Julian saw the picturesque ruins of the ancient church at Vergy, he realized that he had not once thought of Madame de Renal since the day before yesterday. When we parted the other day, That woman reminded me of the infinite distance that separates us. She treated me like a workman's son. No doubt she wanted to emphasize to me how she regretted having let me hold her hand the evening before. Still, it's very pretty, that hand. What charm, what finesse in that woman's glance. The possibility of making his fortune with Fouque lent a certain ease to Julian's thoughts. They were less often distorted by irritation and an acute consciousness of poverty and low social standing. As though raised on a promontory, he was able to judge and, so to speak, stand aloof from both extreme poverty and the easy circumstances he still called wealth. He was a long way from being philosophical, but he was clear-sighted enough to feel different after his little excursion to the mountains. He was surprised by the extremely troubled air with which Madame de Renal heard the short account of his journey she had asked him for. Fouque had made plans to get married and had endured some unfortunate experiences of love. Long confidences on this subject had filled the conversations between the two friends. Having found his happiness too early, Fouque had realized then that he was not the only one to be loved. All his stories amazed Julian. He learned a great deal that was new to him. His solitary life, full of dreams and mistrust, had placed him quite out of the way of those things which could have enlightened him. For Madame de Renal, life had been nothing but a series of torments during Julian's absence, all different but all of them intolerable. She was now truly ill. And above all, said Madame de Ville to her when she saw Julian reappear, indisposed as you are, you won't be going into the garden this evening. The damp air would make you much worse. Madame Derville saw with amazement that her friend, who was always being scolded by Monsieur de Renal for the excessive simplicity of her toilet, had just acquired some open-work stockings and some charming little shoes from Paris. For the past 3 days, Madame de Renal's sole distraction had been in dressmaking, and in getting Eliza to create a summer dress as fast as possible from a fine, pretty material in the height of fashion. This dress was finished only a few minutes after Julian's arrival. Madame de Renal put it on straight away. Her friend no longer had any doubts. She's in love, the poor woman, said Madame de Ville to herself. She understood all the strange symptoms of that malady. She watched her speaking to Julian. Pallor succeeded the most vivid blushes. Anxiety was plain to see in the eyes fixed upon those of the young tutor. Madame de Renal expected at any moment that he would explain himself and announce whether he was leaving the house or staying, but Julian was far from speaking on this subject because he was not thinking about it. After some terrible struggles, Madame de Renal at last dared to ask him, in a tremulous voice that gave away her passion entirely, "Are you going to abandon your pupils to find a place elsewhere?" Julian was struck by Madame de Renal's. Julian was struck by Madame de Renal's uncertain voice and her look. "This woman loves me," he said to himself, "but after this passing moment of weakness which her pride rebukes, and when she no longer fears my departure, she will return to her high manner." This view of their respective positions came to him quick as lightning, and he replied with caution, "I'd feel very much regret about leaving such lovable children, who are so well born, but perhaps it will be necessary. One has duties to oneself as well." In pronouncing the phrase "so well born," it was one of those aristocratic expressions Julian had learned recently. He was driven by a feeling of intense antipathy. "In the eyes of this woman, he said to himself, I am not well born." Listening to him, Madame de Renal wondered at his spirit and his beauty, and her heart was pierced by the possible departure of which he gave her a glimpse. All her friends from Verrières who had come to dinner at the Verger while Julian was away had competed with one another in complimenting her on her astonishing young man her husband had had the good fortune to discover. It was not that they understood anything about the children's progress. To know the Bible by heart and in Latin, what's more, had struck the people of Verrières with a fit of admiration that should last 100 years. Julian, speaking to no one, knew none of that. If Madame de Renal had been capable of at least self-possession, she would have praised him for the reputation he had earned, and Julian's pride reassured, he would have been become pliant and amiable, especially since he found her new dress charming. Madame de Renal, also pleased with the pretty dress and with what Julian said about it, wished to take a turn around the garden. Soon she pleaded that she was not in a fit state for walking. She had taken the traveller's arm, but very far from increasing her strength, contact with his arm quickly robbed her of any she had. It was dark. Hardly had they sat down than Julian, claiming his established right, ventured to put his lips to his pretty neighbour's arm and take her hand. She was thinking of the boldness Fouque had shown with his mistresses. He was thinking of the boldness Fouque had shown with his mistresses, not of Madame de Renal. The phrase "well born" still weighed upon his heart. His hand was pressed. It gave him no pleasure. Far from his being proud of, or at least thankful for, the feelings Madame de Renal betrayed this evening by all too obvious signs, her beauty, elegance, and youthfulness found him virtually insensible. Purity of soul and the absence of any spiteful feelings undoubtedly prolong youth. In most pretty women, it is the face that ages first. Julian was ill-tempered all evening, but up until then he had been angry only with circumstances and society, since Fouque had offered him an ignoble way of securing a comfortable living. He was irritated with himself. Taken up with his thoughts, though from time to time he said a few words to the ladies, Julian ended up inadvertently letting go of Madame de Renal's hand. This action caused turmoil in the poor woman's soul. In it she read her fate. She had been sure of Julian's affection, perhaps she would... Had she been sure of Julian's affection, perhaps she would have been able to gather force enough to resist him. Terrified at losing him forever, her passion led her astray to the point of reclaiming Julian's hand, which in his fit of abstraction had left resting on the back of a chair. This action roused the ambitious young man. He would have loved it to have been witnessed by all those proud gentlemen who at dinner, when he was at the bottom of the table with the children, looked at him with such patronizing smiles. "This woman can no longer despise me," in which case, he said to himself, "I should be receptive to her beauty. I owe it to myself to become her lover." Such an idea would never have occurred to him before. His friend had treated him to his simple confides. The taking of this sudden resolution constituted an agreeable distraction. "I must have one of these two women," he said to himself. He realized that he would much rather pay court to Madame de Ville, not because she was more attractive to him, but because she had always known him as a tutor respected for his learning, and not, as he appeared to Madame de Renal, as a carpenter's assistant with a rattan jacket unfolded under his arm. It was precisely as this young worker, blushing to the whites of his eyes, halted at the house door, not daring to ring, that Madame de Renal thought him most enchanting. Continuing his review of the position, Julian saw that he should not dream of the conquest of Madame de Ville, who had most probably already noticed the preference shown for him by Madame de Renal. Forced to revert to the latter, "What do I know about this woman's character?" Julian asked himself. "Only this. Before I went away, I took her hand, and she took it back. Today I withdrew my hand, and she seized it and pressed it. What a fine chance to pay her back for all the time she had scorned me. God knows how many lovers she has had. She's probably only decided in my favour because of the ease with which we can meet." Such, alas, is the sickness of too much civilization. At 20, a young man's soul, if he has had any education, is 1,000 miles from that freedom of spirit without which love is often the most tedious of duties. I owe it more to myself, went on Julian's petty vanity, to succeed with this woman, since if ever I make my fortune and somebody reproaches me with having had the low occupation of a tutor, I will be able to make it understood that love cast me into this position. Julian, who had again let go of Madame de Renal's hand, now repossessed it, holding it tightly. As they went back into the salon around midnight, Madame de Renal whispered to him, "You're leaving us, you're going away." Sighing, Julian replied, "It is absolutely necessary that I go, for I love you passionately, and it is a sin, and such a sin for a young priest." Madame de Renal leant on his arm so unconstrainedly that she could feel the warmth of Julien's cheek on hers. The nights spent by these two beings were very different. Madame de Renal was exalted by transport of the loftiest moral delight. A flirtatious young woman who loves early gets used to the dramas of love. When she comes to the age of true passion, the charm of novelty is gone. Since Madame de Renal never read novels, all the little details of her happiness were new to her. No melancholy truth came to chill it, not even the prospect of the future. She envisaged herself being as happy in 10 years' time as she was at that moment. Even the idea that had agitated her a few days ago of virtue and of fidelity sworn to Monsieur de Renal came along in vain, to be dismissed like an unwelcome visitor. I will not yield a thing to Julien, said Madame de Renal to herself. We will live in the future as we have lived for the past month. He will be a friend. All right. There we go. Another chapter chaptered. Have your say over at the subreddit. Thank you very much for listening, and I'll see you tomorrow.